Okay, so good morning. Still almost morning, and so I've prepared a half lecture today on aspects of quality of service in wireless networks, and we're going to look at the flavors of networks that we've already had a look at, just, you know, sort of for other aspects. So look at WiMAX. Again, it provides a point-to-point connection, and it was one of the first standards to propose, in addition to, again, the use of OFDMIMO and all those nice things, also sort of explicit mechanisms for dealing with quality of service. Okay. We'll also look at LTE, which was and then wireless LAN or Wi-Fi options. Okay, and so this follows on from our look at a few of the implementation aspects of cellular networks. And one thing you should have come away with from looking at cellular networks is that there is a big premium on control and the network being able to control all the various aspects of sort of the network functioning, okay? And so that's going to come out in sort of, again, how they would approach the quality of service problem. Okay, and so in the first lecture, we said a few words about quality of service. And we observed that different data applications are going to need different delivery parameters from the network. So some applications care that every packet gets there, some don't. Some applications care that packets come regularly or quickly, others don't really. Okay, and we looked at the ITUG recommendation G1010 as a document which surveyed all those different types of applications and then binned the applications up into categories based on their quality of service requirements. Okay. And one thing to note about that is that documents like that are referring to end-to-end characteristics. Now, I point that out because when we look at quality of service in the wireless context, we're actually looking about what's happening essentially on that wireless link. And then we're assuming that once you get to a wired backend to the internet or whatever, that all of the quality of service problems just go away. That may or may not be the case, but the emphasis for the quality of service in wireless is managing primarily the radio resources to make that first step into the network behave itself. Okay, so I'm not going to go over these again, except again to say what G1010 did is it looked at different applications and then looked at what their requirements were, and these came in the form of loss, delay, and bitrate, typically. Okay. And again, based on that, they categorized the various traffic and the traffic classes along two parameters, whether what sort of errors, what sort of loss it could tolerate, and what sort of delay it could tolerate. Okay. So this idea of sort of having to categorize your traffic into a number of classes, again, will follow through to all of the solutions that we look at this time. Exactly what those classes are and what are the parameters, again, vary from solution to solution. Okay. So we're going to look at, again, three different solutions. We're going to look at YMAX, so 802.16 of some flavor, Wi-Fi, 802.11 of some flavor, and cellular networks. And again, we're going to say the characteristic of the architecture of these is such that you have a user connecting wirelessly to some access point. So 802.11 would be an explicit access point. In cellular systems, you would go sort of wedge your way through the cellular system until you got to some sort of gateway, which would get you out to a data network. Okay. And the quality of service solutions that are presented refer to that transit from the user to this access point or gateway. So not from end user to end user, but just into some point where, you know, it's assumed that the network is better behaved. Okay. So how can quality of service be achieved? Well, you can always try to improve this, the radio link between a single user and the access point. Okay, so user modulation and encoding schemes to try and get more data through the link or data more reliably through the link, that radio link. And so we'll mention that, we've mentioned it before, we'll mention it again. All of these solutions would have some some form of adaptation according to channel conditions. But more sort of probably interesting is how we split up resources amongst multiple users. Okay. And basically, what we'll see is that there are two flavors. If the network is in complete control of the resources, and so it grants resources from a central location, then it's relatively straightforward to just say, okay, well, user one, you get so much, user two, you get so much, user three, you get so much. And you can make at least some guarantees, some things like bandwidth. If access is decentralized, as we saw for wireless LANs, Wi-Fi systems, then it becomes much more complex to try and distinguish between different users' data and allow for different user data to be treated in a different fashion. Okay, and so we'll see how that works. Okay, so just to mention it, again, we can try to improve on what gets sent over the channel condition, and we do that by pretty much adapting our data to the channel conditions. We can try and switch channels, but once we have a fixed channel, then again we have to just sort of do the best we can on that fixed channel. And typically what you're going to try and do is vary the data rate. And you can do that by size. Possibly vary your MIMO mode to use more or less antennas. Again, this would have the effect of changing your data rate, because the more antennas you have to dedicate to one data stream, the less you have available. Possibly being able to aggregate channels together to do a single user more bandwidth. And then changing your channel coding scheme, so the worse your conditions, the stronger you want your coding to be so that you can recover from loss. Okay. So we've discussed this earlier. It was a problem of the day. Again, just to take a single example, WiMAX. You vary the modulation and coding, and this can be changed on a verse-by-verse basis, so that means from any individual user to the system, or vice, or back and forth to the system, this coding scheme can be changed. So if one user is sort of way out and receiving a poor signal, they will use something with a low baud rate and strong encoding, whereas if somebody's sitting right next to the access, the second person sitting right next to the access point at the same time, use high baud rate, weaker encoding. Okay. So uplink and downlink vary a slight amount just in the ability of the base station to estimate channel quality. So if you do it directly in the uplink direction, it has to rely on information from the user in the downlink direction. And based on whatever this estimate is, the base station will then choose the modulation encoding scheme. Okay. WiMAX has a total of 52 possible combinations, and you choose from one of those. Okay. And again, we see here that you have mandatory and optional encoding schemes, modulation schemes, and mandatory and optional coding schemes. And again, you pick the combination that best suits the channel quality, and typically for them draw a picture, you decide, well, farther you are from the base station, the worse the channel quality, so the stronger we want our coding, and the slower we want our bit or our So all of the modern wireless systems do something on that order. What this means is that for any given physical resource, so any given frequency, bandwidth, or channel, you're going to get different data rates out of it. And you know, if you flip that the other way around, it does mean that if an application is asking for a certain bandwidth, then you may have to expend more or less physical resources to actually give them that. Okay. So, our first two examples then of how you would share resources out among users are ones which have centralized resource allocation. So there is a central controller which is able to decide on allocation policies. And these would be WiMAX And then a cellular system, so we use LTE as our example. Okay, so again, what is WiMAX? It was initially envisaged as just a point-to-point link to deliver last-mile wireless broadband. So it was envisaged as just a point-to-point high-speed data link, wireless high-speed data. And again, I said earlier that it was the first to propose the use of OFDM and MIMO, so it is also one of the leading edge, or at one point it was sort of cutting edge in terms of the technology it proposed. It was also an early proposer of quality of service allocation. Okay. And this would again be based on some negotiation for the allocation of resources, and allocation of resources boils down to the OFDM TDM slots that make up the basic sub-channels for WiMAX. Okay, so the basic idea, excuse me, is that again for OFDM, you could get the subchannels and you could assign them to different users. By using TDMA, additionally, you can subdivide each of these frequency subcarriers into to share among multiple users. Okay. So slots are some combination again of these time and frequency domains, and typically the base station again is going to assign users a contiguous block of these slots and tell them again based on whatever sort of whatever sort of channel measurements are done what modulation encoding is. So again, if the user begins negotiating a certain bandwidth, for instance, they may be assigned more or less slots depending on the channel conditions. You can also use sort of a spread spectrum ideas and try and spread out the subcarriers again combat small scale fading effects, and if your users are mobile, this is more likely to be necessary. Okay. Allocations are negotiated between the user and the base station, and again, channel conditions is going to inform exactly what the physical resources are, and what's requested is going to be based on quality of service requirements. Okay. The time slots typically are broken up. Are used to distinguish between uplink and downlink, and you can vary the ratio between uplink and downlink. Typically, it's assumed that you need more in the downlink direction. Again, people are streaming video more than they're doing things like video conferencing
or posting videos.
Okay, so that's what a frame is going to, that's what a frame is going to look like. So you're going to, again, have time slots and frequency variation. And on downlink, well, you send data, but you also send mapping information to the users so that they know where and when both to receive the next frame's worth of data and also when where to send their own data. Okay. So again, this is the center of the earth. There's assumed to be a connection between user and database, and again, this base station. And again, the base station is in control of the allocation of resources, or predominantly in control of the allocation of resources. And so, exactly how this is going to be achieved is going to be tied to quality of service policies that are defined in WiMAX. Okay. So, what WiMAX or seeks to do is it's going to examine the user data on a sort of per flow basis. So the user could be doing multiple things at the same time, and each one of those would sort of be negotiated for separately. And so the data is defined as a service flow, and associated with that service flow is some sort of quality of service information. So you're going to ID your data and who it's coming from. Then you're going to look at quality of service parameters. And you'll have three sets. You'll have the sort of the agreed upon set, what's actually being the agreed upon sets. And then what is actually being provisioned at any given time. So this will all be negotiated. The parameters are things like priority, data rates, and so that's long-term averages, short-term maximums, sort of minimum acceptable, how the data should be scheduled, is lost. Won't be accounted for. What's the sort of delay and jitter top tolerance, and sort of how we're going to be able to request these mechanisms. Okay. So these different parameters are going to be used to support five services, so the basic unit of quality of service for WiMAX then is in the form of a specific service type. And associated with each service type is going to be, well, the type of data that that service type most suits. Okay, so for instance, best effort suits the data we don't care too much about. And then tied fairly closely, although not specified, is how the allocation of these different data services, how the resource allocation of those different services will occur. Okay. So the five types. So unsolicited grant service gives the user periodic access, a certain periodic amount of access, and that gives you then sustained data rates. Real-time polling regularly asks the user what they need, so the user is able to vary their requests depending on what they actually need. Non-real-time polling, similar to real-time polling, just doesn't happen as often. So essentially you need some sort of long-term average, but you're not too worried about variability over time. Best effort is just that. And then added was extended real-time variable rate services. And that's sort of a combination of the unsolicited grant and the real-time polling. You're going to be allocated a minimum, but you can then ask for a greater amount. Okay. So, again, each flow will have one of these plus parameterization associated with it, and depending on what your application is, you're going to want one or the other of these. So our first, again, is unsolicited grant service, and that's going to support the transmission of fixed amounts of data, so fixed-size data packets at a constant bit rate. And so an example of that would be voice over IP without silent suppression, so an uncompressed voice over IP service. And so you need to know what your data rate is and sort of what your tolerance of delay. And probably not be given retransmission. And based on that, you think that a sensible way of allocating resources is to just give grants the allocation on a periodic basis. Okay. So what this means is that the user can negotiate this at the beginning of a session, and then there's no request or overhead or latency involved. They just get their resources at the periodic intervals. Our second class is real-time polling services. And so here we would think about flows that have periodically are generating variable size packets. So things like MPEG, so videos, videos being sent. Okay. Since they're typically compressed in some way, depending on what compression is used, so what you know is that you will need to send your data periodically at a sort of real-time rate. But you don't know exactly how much data you have for each period. So again, you want to define sort of a minimum and a maximum data rate and a power and what sort of drop tolerance you have for delay. Again, since we know that we are sort of periodic, we're going to need to regularly send data, so we know that our data transmission is periodic, we just don't know how much in for any given occurrence. The base station will use polling to ask the mobile station, the user, how much bandwidth they need for any given time frame. And that polling is then going to be frequent enough that you're going to meet your latency requirements. Then we have non-real-time polling services. So again, if you're, in some cases, you just essentially what you want is a guaranteed long-term data, longer-term data rate, a minimum long-term data rate, so that if, for example, you're sending a file to the FTP, you want to make sure it does get there eventually, and eventually being not a day later, but maybe a minute or less later. So this could be supported by, again, periodically allowing the user to send their data, but again, there's no real latency issue, no major latency issue, so we can get that feedback from the user less frequently. So again, you want some sort of minimum and maximum data rates. You can prioritize your transmission. And probably in this case, you are going to want to fill in any, you may possibly want to fill in any gaps or any losses. Okay. So in terms of a mechanism, again, the base station can use polling to ask the users or the user how much data they have and allocate based on that, but they don't have to poll as frequently, than even on the order of seconds between polls. The users can also request more resources during the convention-based, the best effort portion of the allocation. So best effort means just that, really you're not too pushed about the level of service. Priorities, you don't have any minimum data rate requirements. You're going to indicate the sort of maximum that you might need. You can prioritize your traffic and either retransmit or not. Okay. So this is this has to be requested on an as-needed basis from the users, and what happens is that there is a period within the frame where the users send their requests on in a contention-based fashion. Okay, so your request may or may not get through in any given polling period, but the assumption is that we'll eventually get there. And finally, we have extended real-time variable rate services. And so again, there are sort of a combination of the first two, where you have periodic and real-time periodic, but of unknown size allocations or requirements, data requirements, and so this is something like voice over IP with silence suppression, so you're using compression now, so the size of the packets is not uniform, but you know, again, they have to sort of be sent in a non-linear fashion, and so as before, you have a sort of a minimum required rates, a maximum rate, some sort of delay tolerance, and probably won't be requesting your data. And since it is a combination of the first two, the allocation policy is also sort of a combination of the typical allocations, and so you are, the user is granted a fixed periodic allocation, but they can also request additional resources within their allocation slots. So they can send within their allocation slot, they can send a request for a greater allocation. Okay. So what we see there again is each of these service policies is linked at least loosely to certain types of traffic, and then they are there are sort of specific and they would tie sort of closely to specific resource allocation policies, although again, it's not necessarily required. So any user is going to, when they think about their data, will have to try and fit it into one of these five classes, and then negotiate for their resources with the network. And since the, again, network is fully in control of the resources, the base station controls all of the allocation, this can be done. Okay. So we'll see a similar story with LTE allocations. The main difference, again, is that it's slightly more complex. So a couple of things, a slightly more complex control structure, which, you know, again, is having sort of, it's not now the point-to-point link, but you are wending your way through a number of links within the cellular system, and a slightly different way of defining the categories, the traffic classes, and allocating to the traffic classes. But again, it's something that will be decided by the centralized system, which hence can fully control the allocation. So we're still talking OFDM carrier slash time slot combinations. And again, depending on channel characteristics, the bit rates may vary over these sub-channels. From the user perspective, the network is going to allocate what are called bearers between now the user equipment and the gateway to the public data network. Okay. So we'll skip forward to just a slide. We'll see that, you know, again, you're going through a number of entities within the cellular system to get to that gateway. In particular, you have the radio that you have back from your base station controller into the system and the gateway. And so, again, end-to-end service would be somewhere at the other side of the internet, but the quality of service is going to be defined from the user equipment to the gateway. Okay. So it's slightly more complex, but again, a good bit of the complexity is going to be, or a good bit of the quality of service issues are going to be primarily in the radio link. Okay. So, whenever a user tries to connect to the network, the system sets off a default bearer, and again, bearers would, you think from a user perspective, a bearer is just a bit pipe, so it allows you to transmit your data. And the main thing from our perspective that the default bearer provides for the moment is an IP address. Okay, so it gives the user its IP identification. Okay. Depending on how much and what sort of data the user wants to send, additional dedicated, not barriers, but bearers need to be set up, can be set up. And these would use the same IP address. Okay. So as long as all the data is going to a single PDN, public data network, one IP address is assigned and it all goes out under that. So technically, you can have multiple IP addresses if you're going to multiple different networks. Okay. The quality of service negotiation controls how many of these bearers are set up, and then what sort of resources are allocated to each bearer. It's, excuse me, but that's really annoying me. So I'll just... Okay, and so there is a negotiation for resource allocation per bearer. parameters. And so the first is the quality of service class identifier. And so that's going to specify parameters such as loss, delay, and priority. You're going to have, as, again, what we'll see is those QCIs are going to be linked with various different types of data traffic. Okay, and we'll go into more detail on the QCI later. You have allocation and retention priority, and so if there's sufficient resources, this doesn't come into play. If there's not enough resources, if the network is overloaded, then that's going to define who has priority, and this is both in terms of essentially who can defend their resources or who has the priority to retain their resources, and also separately, who has a priority to take resources from other people or from other bearers. Okay, so that can be indicated. The allocation may or may not guarantee a bit rate. For the bearer, so what's the maximum allocation they'll receive, and hence the maximum that the user can send into the over that bearer. And additionally, since you can set up a number of bearers, you can put a limit on the total data rate for the non-guaranteed bitrate bearers. Obviously, if you have a guaranteed bitrate bearer, you have to honor that, but you will probably have already sort of through admission sort of limited that. And also just a cap on the total data rate from an individual user. So the probably most significant of these parameters is the QCI, and this is going to define 9 possible quality classes using 4 different parameters. Okay, so the first of these is are we guaranteeing a bitrate or not? The second is what's the tolerable loss rate? What's the tolerable delay? And that's again between the user and the gateway. And then an allocation of priority from low to high, which determines the order of packet handling. So, again, the first big split is according to whether the system is willing to guarantee a bitrate or not. And there is no guaranteed bitrate option for the default bearer. So the default is considered to be best effort service, although associate a number of different quality service classes with this. And so if you want to guarantee bitrate, then you have to set up dedicated bearers. base default bearer, and again, for our purposes, we think that is because it's going to live the IP address to these bearers. And so we can also define dedicated bearers for the non-guaranteed bit rates as well. Again, just by associating different quality of service class indicators with them. Okay. So again, the nine quality of services, QCIs, are distinguished in terms of resources, priority, packet delay, and packet error rate. And this is done with, again, specific services in mind. Okay. And as you'll see, most of these are voice and video services. The highest priority is for signaling. And then again, we, depending on what we have, we either guarantee a bit rate or not. And then within those, we can vary our priority, our delay, and our error rates, and again, this would just depend on what your end application was. And of course, since it's a telephony system, it may also depend on what you're going to pay for, although that's less of an issue at the moment. Okay. So the user is given these bit pipes, and then within them, we have defined two additional entities, service data flows and then packet flows. And so the idea of a service data flow is it's essentially a two-way connection, and it's all the different data streams associated with a specific application. And then the packet flow is then breaking that up into individual data streams. And so that would be a one-way. Okay. In order for service flows to occur on the same bearer, they have to have the same QCI in it and ARP associated with them. Okay. So again, we can see we have a bearer, and then we might have a couple of video streams going, and so since they have the same QCI, etc., associated with them, they can be on the same bearer, and they would, the audio visual stream might be broken up into the audio and the visual components, which can be synchronized. So, from the network perspective, again, bearers give the basic data pipe to bit pipe to the users, and their goal is to transport the data, they will have specific allocations negotiated
with the network. The service data flow is allows the user to negotiate sort of a per application quality of service with the network using a service data flow template. And again, this allows the network to charge the user for this quality of service. And then the packet flow is the actual data being sent. Okay. So we're not going to say much about resource scheduling, because that's usually left to the cellular network providers, how they want to allocate these resources. You can think it's probably complex. You know, they may use policies that are parallel, that are similar to the WiMAX ones, and given sort of regular allocations. They have to be based, again, on the quality of service requirements, the channel quality indicators, and the network load, possibly. And they will come in form of, again, block allocation over which you have an adaptive modulation encoding scheme in place. Okay, so again, it's similar to WiMAX in the sense that there's a centralized control of the resource allocation. So the network is able to make is able to do these negotiations because it has a complete view of what resources are available and complete control to dole them out. Our final example is our wireless LAN network. And again, we've discussed we've presented wireless LANs earlier, and the sort of main sort of the key standout feature is, again, medium access control. How are you sharing out the resources? And the answer is you're letting people contend for them. So it's a contention-based system. So contention-based systems, as you might think, don't particularly lend themselves to supporting quality of service, but we'll see there are a few things you can do. Okay, so again, at some point, Wi-Fi also adopted adaptive modulation encoding schemes, so your modulation and coding rate are going to differ depending on channel quality. And currently there's, again, 78 permutations, so it's all like 52 for WiMAX, so 78 here. And one thing to note is that not all of them have to be supported. Again, what are they going to do? They're going to vary the data rate and the coding rate depending on quality of the channel, and the upshot of that is you're going to get different data rates over the same, ostensibly the same channel. But again, leaving that aside, it's not as significant for us now because, again, there's no controller who can say, oh, yeah, well, if you're getting a lower data rate, you need more bandwidth. There's no way to say that. Okay.
There is a standard defining various quality of service policies. Specifically, there is a hybrid control function, but it relies on a point control function. So it relies on actually there being a centralized controller, which we already said really hasn't been implemented for wireless networks. So again, if such a thing were to be implemented, it would then have the control and it would allocate the resources to suit various different data requirements. There is a second policy called EDCA, which again does work on top of this contention mechanism. Okay. And so it's a much cruder tool than we've seen before, but it does allow for some favoring of various traffic, or different traffic classes, one over the other. Okay. So basically, what we're going to do is we still have this contention system, but we're going to try and give an edge to our higher priority classes. Okay. And basically, the two things we can, in terms of getting in there and getting our seasoned medium, the two things that we can play with are our interframe spacing. So we already noted if your interframe spacing is shorter, then you get in before somebody who has a longer interframe spacing. And also, you can play a contention window. So if your contention window is smaller, again, the period over which you're waiting is smaller, then in some statistical sense, you are likely to get in before somebody who has a bigger contention window. So EDCA uses this to define four traffic classes, two best efforts, one voice and one video. And it's going to define different interface spacing and contention windows for each. Okay. That's going to have the effect of, again, getting certain traffic classes, giving certain traffic classes an edge and seizing the medium. Okay, so again, for each traffic class, what do we get? We get the contention window, the higher priority the traffic class, the shorter their contention window. Similarly, for interframe spacing, the higher the priority of the interframe, or the smaller the interframe spacing, the higher priority your packets. Finally, we also add what's called a transmission opportunity. So once you seize the medium, instead of that being good for a single packet, you actually get a time interval. You get a fixed amount of time over which you can send as much as you're able. Okay, so you can send multiple packets for any grab of the medium. So, again, we have our two best efforts.
classes, and so they have the worst of all worlds. So they've got the biggest convention windows and larger interframe spacing. We distinguish between the interframe spacing via our, we distinguish between the two traffic classes via our interframe spacing. Okay. They don't get any maximum transmission opportunity. They just get sent one packet and try again. Now, between video and voice, well, you can see that voice is seen to have a somewhat higher priority, so its attention node is smaller. On the other hand, video gets a bigger transmission opportunity, which is reasonable because video is going to have more data to send in general. Okay. And then if people aren't playing, it also adds that in. Okay. So, again, that's the system. And the things to note about that is it works for traffic classes. Okay, so it's not favoring any individual user. It's not making any guarantees for an individual user. If five users fall within the same traffic class, you know, they're still going to be contending with each other. It also is not an absolute priority system. Just because you've stacked the deck in favor of your higher priority classes, that does not mean that in actuality they will always get in first. So lower priority traffic classes will occasionally get in before the higher priority. Okay. So, again, what we see is that what's on offer, it's a much weaker form of quality of service support than is possible, again, if we're willing to become a control freak and control everything. Okay, so that's it for today. We have, I threw in a few references at the back, which, again, we deal with all three systems. You've got one that compares WarnMax and LTE, a fairly high level one on LTE, fairly detailed one on WarnMax, but I already sort of referenced that earlier. And then if you're interested in the EDCA installing, has a good description of that. So that's it for today. We have one more lecture left, and I'm going to talk a bit about mobile routing issues. So, again, we've been looking at these single wireless link system. Yeah. Now we have a question, well, what if everything's wireless and it's all moving? Sort of everything gets very complicated, obviously, if you have that sort of a system. It's sort of significantly different. I'm not going to go into it in any detail. We're going to have another half lecture next week. I've got a conflicting meeting. Most likely, I'll go the half 11 to 1 slot. It's possible that that will have to change, depending on the exact timing of this meeting. So anyway, that's it for today. Enjoy the rest of the day. It looks like the sun may finally be coming out. So I'll see you guys next week.